CAR, you know, as a trade association, as the supporter and champion of realtors, is making sure that realtors are equipped to support all of their clients. And this is really set up to help folks who are working with members of underserved communities who need to be connected with programs. Another place is multicultural real estate trade organizations oftentimes will host first-time buyer programs. The Realtists have Realtists Week, and a part of Realtists Week, it's in April every year, is, you know, a home buyer workshop or home buyer program.
I just feel like it needs to be on billboards or something. Yeah. Like, it's too hard. I'm going to get 50 hidden. People here and 800 people here. We're California. We have millions of people.
Yeah.
People don't know. They do not know.
Yeah. Courtney, your friends about to show you how to generate wealth. Get educated, do for yourself. Add a couple notches to your belt. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real. Under all is the land. Under all is the land. The real, real real estate. Coming to you live from Acme Real Estate in Los Angeles, California.
Welcome to Under All is the Land. I am your host, Courtney Polis, here with my rock star co-stars, Silke Fernald.
Hello.
And Dominique Madden.
Hello.
These ladies are looking lovely today.
Well, thank you so much.
So do you. Radiant. Thank you so much. Can I tell you something annoying that I've noticed lately? Really annoying?
Yeah. Always.
Okay. So I have been watching Instagram more than normal, probably because I'm not going out and not drinking and doing anything. And I'm seeing like a lot of agents posting other agents' listings. Oh. And really making it look like they're the ones who are involved in the transaction. Not only that, my client sent me a flyer. Somebody in the neighborhood, like where I sold a house, took the picture from my listing. He wasn't involved on the buy side or the sell side, obviously. I was the listing agent. And actually made a whole flyer with a testimonial from the sellers. My sellers got it and screenshot it and sent it to me, and they were pissed. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is a code of ethics violation. So I called him and I said, listen, you know, this is a code of ethics violation. And I thought about when, some, you know, when I gave it grace because I feel like people just need to know people are paying attention now. Mm-hmm. But since then, I've noticed on Instagram several people posting sold listings that were not theirs, not and posting other people's listings and not even mentioning that they're listed by someone else. Mm-hmm. It's very deceptive.
Well, it's almost like desperate times, desperate measures.
Yeah, you think people are just willing to take the risk?
Yeah, I think so. I think since interest rates went way up, and I would probably say half of the buyer pool has reduced, it's reduced by half about, what do you say?
Yeah.
I think, you know, there's probably lots of agents who are hurting for business.
Maybe.
Because in the times when we were, when things
abundant.
Were rolling and everything, nobody even had time to post.
That's true.
And now you see all these other agents posting other
it's
people's
listings. It's
not a good
excuse, though.
You know what? No, I don't think it's that. Honestly,
you don't think that's
no,
what the reason
I,
is, though?
I think that
to
people just
business?
Aren't being, I just don't think people are being punished for it. You know, I think
right.
people are getting away with too much shit and there's no one holding them accountable.
There's no accountability.
Yeah, there's no accountability. It's like if you make an ethics complaint, you have to go through a whole rigmarole to
right.
freaking, you know, yeah. actually hold the person accountable.
It's true. Right. That's
you know,
true.
And then you can damage that relationship going forward, you know, if there's someone who's in the market. So it's just, it's a tricky scenario because, you know, like we should be holding them accountable, but the people who we should hold them accountable with don't help us do it. You
right.
know what I mean?
It's too
so
hard.
It's, yeah.
It's but I think hard. Part. But I think part of it is also this trying to generate business by making yourself
yeah.
like,
oh,
like
yeah,
I'm selling
sure.
all these things that I'm not selling.
For
and
sure.
I'm not crediting the other person because, like you said, no one really
No
cares.
One's really paying attention. Right. I mean, people are watching, but no
yeah.
one's slapping the wrist.
Right. right.
Or, you know,
right.
saying this
I
is
mean,
a violation.
So it's
I
the
see
Wild
people
West.
People who are not brokers, well, not brokers, they're broker associates, posting big real estate signs on elementary schools and whatever
mm-hmm.
with no mention of their listing,
nothing.
Of the brokerage that they,
mm-hmm.
they hang their license at. I mean, it's like a, it, there's, it's somebody's job, I feel
yeah.
like. It's not my job.
The brokers need to be holding people accountable.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, the brokers.
Like,
the brokers
if,
need to poli-
if we
police
saw,
their own agents.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
if we
true.
Saw our people doing that,
yeah.
we'd be like, yo, you need to like put some mention of the agent in this thing
that's
here.
That's so
you
true.
Need to, or the brokerage, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there are so many people who are with behemoth brokerages
yeah.
that are not looking at what these people are doing
right.
and they're having liability on
well,
them.
Well, that's the
know?
Thing also with big brokerages. It's like these, a lot of the brokers, they clock in, they clock out, you know, they're employees. They have sales like caps they're trying to hit with in-house like services and recruitment numbers and all that thing. I don't know that they even have time to properly train and hold accountable their agents who are doing questionable things in the field. But let alone I'm sure somebody from that office has driven by the signs because they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I don't want to make enemies because I'm not the police like that, but I do see it and I think who loses? The consumer loses because they are being lied to. Mm-hmm. And I think that sucks.
Well, it just makes us or the people that do it the honest way, it's just not fair.
It's not fair.
Like I'm tagging the agent because I want to be tagged. It's just what right. It is. It's fair. You work hard to get a listing, to get it ready. If I see the picture on someone else's page and it's my listing and they don't tag me, I would be like, hey, yo, do you mind throwing me
a bone here?
At least put my name. So it's my, I paid for those photos.
Right.
You know, so that's what it is. It's just not okay for the people that do play by the rules. And that's why we feel angry because it's just not right.
It's not right. I feel like it totally makes, people don't treat each other the way they'd like to be treated.
Yeah.
No. If there's one business that encourages bad business, it's real estate.
Yeah. For sure.
It's not that hard. Just be fair.
It's really not that hard.
Yeah.
And you know what? You don't even have to tag, like Instagram tag the listing agent, in my opinion.
You can name them.
You just follow the rules, which are say who the listing brokerage is.
Yeah. You don't owe anybody a tag, but you owe the brokerage name on the bottom.
Yes, you do.
That is what we all agreed to when we took the code of ethics and all
you know what? If I ever get out of being a broker, maybe I will go into policing.
Uh-oh.
I'm so excited to have Farrah Wilder here. She is the Vice President and Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at California Association of Realtors. I've wanted to have her on the show for a very long time. She's fighting the good fight for future homeowners and current homeowners in California. Welcome to Under All is the Land, Farrah. Welcome. Welcome to Under All is the Land.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're so excited to have you. We have wanted to have you as a guest for a long time. So could you please introduce yourself, what your career history has been, and what you do for the California Association of Realtors?
Sure. So I am the Vice President and Chief Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Officer at the California Association of Realtors, and I do all kinds of diversity things, both on the staff side, member side, and in our leadership. We have a very large 850-member board. And I also help support fair housing education and initiatives. And I work with our government affairs department on policy. And I also help with homebuyer assistance programs and homeownership opportunity for members of underserved communities.
That's a mouthful.
Yes,
that's a lot of stuff.
It is. And so how
seems
did
like
I...
been more than a 40-hour week.
And you asked me another question.
Yes,
there.
Like your history. Like, how'd you get here?
Yes, how did I get here? Okay, so it's been a journey, and I wasn't expecting for this to be where I landed, but I feel like I landed exactly where I was supposed to mm-hmm. be. So I started off as a civil rights attorney a long time ago in San Francisco, and then I left that to become a realtor, did that for 13 years, always kind of with this lens of being very community-based. I was on Sierra's board, and then at some point, we're all remote, pandemic, we're going through a racial reckoning, and they approached me with this position, and at first I was like, oh, you know, I don't know if I'm qualified for that. The job description was intimidating, and I had some conversations and decided to go for it, and here I am.
And
two
here
and a
you
half
are.
Two wow. and a half years later.
So it's a new position.
Yes and no. So okay. It is new in its current iteration, but okay. I cannot say I'm the first person to ever do diversity or fair housing work at Sierra.
Okay.
There was someone, Kelly Braden, for folks who've been around for a long time, they will maybe know that name, and she was really influential in diversity, really helped with when the Multicultural Real Estate Alliance for Urban Change started. She really helped support multicultural groups. So yeah, so there was someone.
Gotcha.
Before me.
So to you, what does fair housing mean?
Fair housing It's a number of things. You know, on its face, it's policies. So these are the rules and the laws that really help make sure that, you know, basically that anyone in the real estate industry is not discriminating, that people aren't experiencing discrimination. But these also are laws that really are put in place to address the history and legacy of discrimination. So there are things like special purpose credit programs, and those are programs that are specifically targeted to certain groups that have either historically been excluded or have a specific barrier or challenge. And those programs actually allow for a targeted remedy to a challenge that we see. And
that feels very obscure to me. I don't know what a targeted remedy is. I don't want a special purpose. So can you get more specific?
Yes. So, for example, and we'll not make it about race at this point, but oftentimes they are about race. So, for example, teachers. You know, we know that our teachers work really hard. They might not make as much as, say, you know, tech workers. You know, I worked in the Bay Area, so there's that disparity. And housing is a scarce resource, right? So you might have a special loan program, and there are statewide special loan programs for teachers that are specifically targeted to address the special challenges that teachers face. And we value teachers. We need teachers in our community. Mm-hmm. So we have loan programs for them. Mm-hmm. We also have racially based special purpose credit programs. And those work to address a legacy of past exclusion and discrimination. So people of color tend to have less generational wealth. Generational wealth comes from your grandparents, your parents having owned a home, mostly.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, and so because of, you know, discrimination was not just happening in the past, but it was promoted. It was legal, and actually it was seen to be the right thing to do at some point in history, which is really terrible.
Disturbing.
Yeah, terrifying.
Yes, and so because it was so pervasive, and because it was, I mean, discrimination was actually the
law.
Rule.
Yeah.
We now have these huge wealth and homeownership gaps, and for people who work in real estate, like I used to, like you do, we know that a lot of folks come in to meet with us, you know, in seeking to buy a home, and they're getting their down payment from parents, or they don't have student loans because their parents own their homes, and were able to help them with college.
Yep.
So there's a disparity there, and special purpose credit programs or fair housing laws that, you know, allow for specific remedies are really targeted to help address those disparities.
Do the people in the community actually know that these programs exist? Because I feel like people don't know.
I think it depends, and that's the best way I can say that. I mean, I know that when I was a realtor, and this is before the explosion of some of these programs, now we have a lot more than we used to. People would come to me and say, isn't there a program? You know, are there programs? I mean, people have this vague sense that if they're a first-time buyer and, don't
make
that
so first-time
much.
Buyer question.
Yeah, they're like,
But, you know, we serve in a lot of different communities. I rarely hear the question, are there any special purpose, like, it's not there. They're not like, are there any loans for African American people in this community to build, buy? I think, where's the word getting out? You know, are you doing real estate education, realtor education?
Yes.
Like, are there Zooms for this where you can train realtors? Okay, good to know. We need to do that. Yeah. But I think there's also needs to be some community awareness around this, because it could help get people out of paralysis, which is something we see a lot. People don't know they can do it, and we're like, yes, you can. And then we seem like the ones who are being unrealistic. No, I can't. Like, Dominique helped somebody recently who had not a lot of money to put down, and, you know, but because Neek knows how to do creative financing and put a deal together and sell it, she got her house. You know, it's not easy when you don't have rich parents, or, you know, you got some debts, or not, you don't have an 800 credit score, but it's possible.
Right.
So people need to know that. Where is there a place online people can go to find that information?
Yes. And so I want to make a big picture point here. Mm-hmm. Many times when people are looking to buy a home, the first place they go is to a realtor. And I think, you know, the ways that you're doing real estate and that I did real estate is the way that we all should be doing real estate. Everyone in the real estate industry should be generally aware of all the programs or have partnerships that allow for them to connect anyone who comes. And even if they are not quite sure of how to help that person, maybe they only do listings, or maybe they work with investors, to someone they know is a good resource for that. Because I experienced and saw, you know, people would come to me after going to someone who said, I don't think you can buy it. You don't have enough. And that person may have been fully capable of buying if they were connected to the right program. And because it's so intimidating, sometimes people just don't try. They just quit.
That's it.
And yeah. And the, you know, the interest rates go up, the prices go up, people get priced out who otherwise could buy. So that's one thing. But CAR has a program called Steps Toward Home Ownership. So and it's usually really well attended. I think you've been on Steps Toward Home Ownership. So you probably
like I've been on that one.
Yes, I have. And so this is and so if there's realtors watching, it's like a quarterly program. The next one is April 5th.
I think we just got an email about it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so there's usually like 800 to 2,000 people in the audience, and it's all about lending programs, and they're really talking a lot about these down payment assistance programs, the special purpose credit programs. So that's one place. And what CAR, you know, as a trade association, as the supporter and champion of realtors, is making sure that realtors are equipped to support all of their clients. And this is really set up to help folks who are working with members of underserved communities who need to be connected with programs. Another place is multicultural real estate trade organizations oftentimes will host first-time buyer programs. The Realtists have Realtists Week, and a part of Realtists Week, it's in April every year, is, you know, a home buyer workshop or home buyer program.
I just feel like it needs to be on billboards or something.
Yeah.
Like, it's too hard. You get 50
hidden.
People here and 800 people here. We're California. We have millions of people.
Yeah.
People don't know. They do not know.
Yeah. I get your point. It's like whenever Bank of America came out with that no money down, like, you know, thing, right? That
we're supposed to be
scammy.
In our market, as much as I think that they were advertising it could. But, you know, people were like, oh my God, Bank of America, this like zero money down thing. I got to get in on that. So it's like all of a sudden people who didn't feel empowered were popping out of the woodwork feeling like, I actually might be able to do this. But, you know, but I don't see them popping up and saying, oh my God, there's this teacher loan that I have, like, not teacher loan, but help for teachers, that I can use to, like, you know, whatever. But, you know, so it's not like they know enough that it's bringing them out to, like, even ask the agents. Because what I experience in a lot of open houses and areas where, like, you know, maybe income levels aren't as high as other areas, right? So people might not feel like they can participate. Is that a lot of them are scared to have the conversation because they feel like they're going to be rejected, you know?
So
I think if, you know, even I do think agents should know what programs are available, but I also think that the people that we're serving need to also be more aware so that then they feel like they can talk about it. Yeah.
You know,
you need
a PR
team talking about that because Bank of America has huge PR.
That's why everybody knew about it.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
You need to start a PR group to just talk about that.
That's one thing. So, and a couple of other things. You know, I think that traditionally, you know, a lot of, and then not every realtor or agent is like this. You know, a lot of realtors focus on the luxury high end market.
You mean they try?
You know,
or they
market.
Focusing on luxury, but really they haven't ever had a $5 million listing. But
so,
go ahead.
Here's the thing. There's a lot of realtors out there, and this is a really grassroots way of doing marketing. One big, you know, kind of amplified way is, you know, your $1 million listings and selling Sunset and all that, you know, and that's the, you know, the image of real estate, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, you know, it's not balanced because the vast majority of people who buy homes of realtors are not doing that level of transactions.
Of
you know, that's just, that's a very
a handful of
narrow.
People do that transaction.
Yes. Yeah. And so one thing, and I have seen this from lenders, like, so the California Dream for All program was just announced, and I have seen so many Instagram lives from lenders, and this is great because actually this is a grassroots way. You know, sure, Bank of America is like that top down, I did a press release, and you know, now everybody knows about it. CalHFA is the state organization that's really helping to administer the California Dream for All program. They may not have the budget that Bank of America has, but lenders are really helping on their Instagrams. Now, is the consumer connected more with realtors or with lenders.
Yeah, I mean, the lenders are marketing to realtors right. for this program, which
but
is
But also
fine.
Realtors. I've seen many realtors making reels and doing things. Awesome. Like, there was one, I was like, oh my God, this guy needs a show. The way that he broke it down, I'm like,
that's good.
It was really good. But yeah, no, that one, I will say, I've seen more than I've seen any other program
it's,
talk about.
It's exploded. Yeah. And then one other place that I think is really important and often overlooked, we talked about, in our world, you know, having schools, you know, do more around
real estate education,
real estate,
like long-term financial planning.
When you talk about financial literacy, and, you know, I think there's a distinction between assuming, you know, that certain communities, you know, don't have more home ownership because they have mismanaged their money. I think generational wealth is really a bigger factor.
100%. There. Yes. Yeah.
But sure. You know, I also think that many people do not understand, including myself for a long time, you know, like the difference between certain credit scoring models, you know, what you need to do, you know, in order to boost your credit, you know, like kind of how student loans interact with that, and then what you'll need to do in order to buy a home, and the fact that down payment assist, you might be able to buy a home for zero money down, and how do you do that, and what are closing costs?
I remember this, I always associate this, when I was little, there are worse, but you know, there are better. And I remember I had holes in my socks, and I told my friends that I loved having holes in my socks because I thought they were cool. It was the 80s, so to be fair, it could have been cool. But like only when I got older, I realized that that was my pride, because I knew we couldn't really get what we needed all the time. And so, you know, that was my way of owning that shit, you know? Yeah. And so I feel like sometimes there's something like that. Like if you think it's out of reach for you, you reject it, as opposed to seeing, okay, I don't want to be excluded from this. There's power in here somewhere. There's place. Like, I deserve my space, my thing, my flag I can stick in the ground and say, this is mine. And this is something I'm going to give to my kids. And this is how you can't move me. And there's no eviction. I don't need to fight for eviction rights because I don't want to be a renter for 90 years. You know, there's empowerment in that. So I feel like there's something in the narrative sometimes where I know, I understand that people don't want to see their communities change, but I think there needs to be a counter kind of narrative about owning and staying and claiming and being there and fighting for that, you know, now that we have the kind of programs that we're talking about to support that.
Completely agree. And I grew up in Detroit, and in Detroit, you know, we all kind of, I feel like almost everyone I knew owned their homes, and it was really accessible. And I think, and I believe I heard somewhere that there was this value, like the car companies kind of promoted home ownership to all of their employees. They wanted to actually make the salaries high enough, you know, and it wasn't like a huge leap, but high enough so that people could buy a home. But the Midwest is a bit more affordable. When I moved here, and you know, I was working not in real estate, and I wasn't a real estate attorney, but I kept hearing, oh, homeownership's not for everyone. And that was so weird, because I'm in a very, like, you know, not everyone had college educations, right. But they were, you know, working. In, you know, blue collar factory, whatever it was, and owning their homes. My parents, you know, hadn't graduated from college, and maybe, you know, not even, you know, took college courses after they owned homes, actually. You know, so that narrative had been here. And I think, so I don't even think it's people thinking it's out of reach and that's why they've decided they don't want it. You know, they've been told it's not something
not
they can attain. And also a lot of the programs around housing focus on rentals. And when you're focusing on rentals and just making sure that someone has a house, there's nothing wrong with renting. However, you know, when you're thinking of housing, considering home ownership in the mix can be a really empowering way to kind of close wealth gaps, because we know that for a lot of most families, most of their wealth is tied up in home ownership. And particularly if there's an opportunity to get in at a reasonably affordable price, start paying down your mortgage. And, you know, I'm telling a lot of folks who really understand this concept, but to people in the audience who may not, you know, getting in there, paying down your mortgage and paying yourself back is a really excellent way to start to, you know, really stabilize yourself and stabilize future generations. And so these programs that allow people to get in, like the California Dream for All program, really put people on a particular path. and start to close these gaps. So I think it's up to, you know, not just the person, because how else will they know if this is the message that they've been given?
Right.
But it's up to all of us to have that message be the case, and also to really, you know, kind of try to promote for folks who are in a community the ability to maybe, like, what I also know that you have this value too, to like purchase a home in your community. And, you know, right. Try to stay in your community and help build it. So
that's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a real possibility for people. And, you know, I just think people need to know that and not fight so hard against it as a possibility. I mean, if mm-hmm. you make a choice. It's your mm-hmm. choice. Mm-hmm. But we're in this unique era. Unfortunately, a lot of people had to suffer for this awareness to get into corporations and even get into this level in our association.
Yeah.
But we know now, you know, like mm-hmm. what's happening historically. We see the deeds that have, you know, racial restrictions, religious restrictions, all kinds of restrictions. We understand what LA was doing yeah. when they started to move things around.
Yes.
Like, we get it. We see it. We mm-hmm. got it. We know it now. So how can we change it?
Well, and I think there is something to be said for being concerned about, you know, people not being able to afford to buy a home in their own community, and all of a sudden, you know, having pressure on a community that before, you know, was disinvested and actually somewhat attainable and affordable from, you know, folks who are all of a sudden coming in from somewhere else. And what does that do to a community? So, you know, kind of thinking about, you know, as you're considering, you know, development within a community, making sure that you're not leaving behind the folks who are already there, making sure they have an opportunity to benefit from that development, maybe even helping to support them with some home ownership opportunities, maybe just for those folks, because, you know, honestly, they may not historically have had other options of places to live. They might not have had right. as much opportunity to build wealth or earn high incomes. And now that all of a sudden their community is desirable, I think it can be a double or triple harm on them if they are disregarded or not seen as valuable now that their community itself
right.
is valuable.
Right. So. See, this is where I think Bank of America got it wrong. There are these big businesses who have been making money hand over fist the past few years, who have enough to be able to offer lower interest rate loans or loans with smaller or like increasing, you know, maybe on year one it's 0% down, and then year two you're collecting a little more for 1% down, and maybe that's bundled in somehow. Or, you know, there are so many ways to cut that cake that big institutions could be our, you know, could benefit, could be a resource, because ultimately, I don't think it's all on the government. But I have another question, a more controversial question. It's really not that controversial to me. I'm clear on it. But how do you feel about the personal, like the love letters, kind of default no love letters thing? Because I have my thoughts. I want your thoughts.
I wish I knew your thoughts before I gave my thoughts. But I'll start.
Okay, you start.
That's okay. Yeah, no, and I actually, you know, I'm very clear on my own thoughts. So
okay.
I, you know, full disclosure, once you see something a certain way, then and you can't unsee it, you might shift how you do things. And once you know better, you can do better. Mm-hmm. At this point, I would not recommend buyer love letters. Mm-hmm. At one point in my career, when I was working with buyers mm-hmm. and we were in competition, you know, everybody was writing love letters, and, you know, I didn't see it that way. Of course, I'd scan them. I'd go, oh, you know, you don't want to mention race. You don't want to mention certain demographic things. Mm-hmm. But I was not of the mind that there was an issue with buyer love letters. At this point, especially because I've seen videos and stories of...
Tell us about that.
Yeah, of this, the 50s and the 60s and the 40s and the Levitt towns of people saying, oh...
You mean, know, 1950s?
Yeah.
Okay.
We don't want, you know, we want a certain kind of person.
Right, of course.
We're looking
what about right now?
Yeah,
right
so,
now.
Right. So I am reminded by that narrative when, you know, we hear realtors go, you know, my sellers just don't know what direction to go. They want to know a little bit more about the buyer before mm-hmm. they make a decision. They have like 10, 15 offers.
Yeah.
They want to feel a connection. But in that connection comes bias. In that connection comes, you know, the person that they feel connected to and the person they feel disconnected to, based on, you know, maybe something that they don't realize is resonating with them, could be a similarity like culture or race or familial status or sexual orientation. And so that can lead to a different treatment based on demographic groups that people don't even realize. They're really not aware. And I'll tell you a story. So I had a client, she might have been neurodivergent, or, you know, she wasn't warm and fuzzy with most people, you know.
Neurodivergent. So I've never heard that.
I am going to explain this. This is so huge in the diversity world. So okay. Neurodivergent means, and you know, what is neurotypical? I mean, well, who is in their, in the way that they engage with others and the way their brain processes and the, you know, normal. What is normal? We all might be neurodivergent, but it's a term that describes people maybe on the autism spectrum who are highly sensitive. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of folks who really, you know, prefer not to be hugged or who don't make eye contact, and that may stem from, you know, just a different way of processing and communicating with folks, right? And
sure.
And because if we understand neurodivergence, then we can be more inclusive of folks who you know, kind of engage differently than our expectation, because we can think, okay, wow, this person, you know, didn't shake my hand and didn't look at me when they said hello, and I'm not going to think that person is unfriendly or unintelligent, and I'm going to engage with them the way that they prefer to. Maybe they don't want hugs, so I'm not going to take it personally, and know that they might have some brilliance.
But the seller and that buyer, they don't meet.
The seller met the buyer.
Oh, that's
and so
dangerous.
So
well,
here's
that's
the thing. Well,
not.
No, I know that, but it's but the biases can come in a lot of different ways. So I'll tell you what happened. The seller happened to be at the house when this person looked at it, and I met with the listing agent. You know, they were in my office, and I did a presentation, and the other agent also did a presentation. We were kind of neck and neck. They picked the other one because they said, and the listing agent told me, the seller just felt more of a connection with the other.
So that's when you meet the people. That's why we don't, buyers and sellers don't meet. But what about the letter?
The letter creates...
Because the letter doesn't, that's not the same thing.
It creates a similar vibe, you know? So you kind of have someone resonating or not based on the impression that they're getting from a letter.
Okay, but devil's advocate here. I got to say, my sellers, they do want to know. They want to know who the people are. They don't care about race. They care about money, but mostly they care about emotional commitment to the sale. They want to know that these people love the house, and so much that if there's a hurdle, that they'll jump it, which is what the buyer's love letters look like now. I remember when there were pictures and babies and all the thing. We don't do that anymore. So like our clients, if love letters are allowed, what they're writing is more like the architectural detail and, you know, our commitment to the house. Nothing that could be, I don't think, have bias in it. Nothing demographic whatsoever. But if a buyer doesn't write a love letter, it works against them. The seller's like Googling them. You're leaving it to Google, basically, because you can't avoid people discriminating
people.
If they don't like somebody's last name.
Yeah.
Silka had a client who literally was Persian, right? Was she Persian? And they don't work together anymore because she said, I don't want you to show it to any Persian people. I don't want to sell it to any Persian people. Okay.
And I said, I'm not going to be, I can't be racist.
I'm not going to be racist for you.
I'm not.
You know, I'm not going to discriminate for you.
But so, I also had, not to cut you off, but I also had a recent sale where the neighbor really wanted the house.
Yeah.
And her agent did not do her any service. She didn't write a letter. She didn't say anything. There was nothing. It was a dry offer with no emotion, with nothing. And she almost didn't get the house because her agent did not help her get the house and made a case for her explaining, look, this is your person. They're going to close.
Yeah.
We only knew that because she actually talked to the seller directly, knocking on the door saying, hey, I want this house. Otherwise, her offer would have fallen under, it wouldn't have even been considered. And that's where I think a letter can help you. And there was nothing discriminatory there. There was nothing fair. Like, this was just a full-on make a case for your client to win a house. And that's what our job is as agents, right?
I think that it's unrealistic is what it is, because the sellers have the right to accept or reject any offer. they can come up with any reason why they want to accept or reject any offer, you know, but the bottom line is, I'm going to be completely honest, with the exception of this one person that Silke interacted with, most of my sellers want the surest thing at the highest price and the best terms. And all they're really concerned about is that the person doesn't seem flaky.
So there's ways. So first of all, I totally am sensitive to that. As someone who used to work in Oakland, and Oakland is one of the most difficult competitive markets in California. I mean, there's competitive markets, and Oakland is one of them. So I'm sensitive to that. Mm-hmm. One thing I will say is, I think the realtor needs to be very much letting their seller know about both bias and the danger of knowing additional information outside of the terms of the offer, and how that can lead them to make decisions based on the 22 protected categories under the Fair Housing Act. I'm not just talking about race, gender, you know, all these other things. I don't know anyone who can rattle all 22 of them off.
I can probably do more than average, but
22 is a lot, you know. So let me just say this.
No, I just wonder what else is on there.
One
besides
of them is
the
arbitrary characteristics.
Oh.
So what does that mean? Does that mean job?
What does that mean?
What does that mean? Is that
arbitrary?
So
you're telling me if I'm a seller and I receive an offer from a buyer who is an influencer on Instagram, which I consider a very unstable job, that I don't have the right to not accept their offer?
What I'm trying to say is that I am not an attorney right now.
But you
I was an attorney, but I'm not a licensed practicing attorney in this particular area. So I would say that, you know, you'd have to call to make sure, especially, you know, and if they did.
You can't force a seller to sell to anybody.
Right,
that's not
right.
fair either.
No, I'm just saying you have to let them know.
I'm
saying, and if they are concerned about liability, they might think twice about that. And also, if someone believes that that was the reason
how would that kind of thing look like? No,
so
also
that might,
like,
that might
so you
like,
chose, there's 15
so
offers,
you
choose this one
so
particular.
So I can tell you. So the listing agent says, and so this, we're getting in the weeds with this, but that's
I like it. Get in there.
So the listing agent says to the buyer's agent, this is the reason why this offer wasn't accepted. They just were concerned about this person's job.
But we would never say that.
I know, not you. But
you,
let's
somebody
just,
else
let's
might
just say
that.
Yeah,
let's
somebody,
say somebody
oh,
said
see.
That.
Yes,
okay,
it's happened. You know, it has happened, right?
Well, I know that I had a VA buyer where the listing agent said the sellers want to take, after they already accepted our offer, they tried to retract their acceptance of our offer and go with another offer because the other offer had more down payment.
Okay,
which was a VA loan, so you can't discriminate
so
against
just,
a low down payment
it's,
for a
I would
VA
say
loan.
It's a gray area, and it's something where someone might call the legal hotline or reach out to the DRE to make sure, because you know of how broad and expansive California law is, and so if you are giving this additional information, the door gets opened to that kind of analysis, even a biased analysis. Mm-hmm. And I will say there are some ways, and you know,
get in not, there.
Not
don't
every
be afraid.
No, I'm not. I'm just trying to find a way to say it. There, you know, you don't have to necessarily. I can't say that buyer letters are illegal. You know, they're
no,
not.
They're not illegal.
Right.
Because there's an option in the listing agreement where
not,
you can choose to receive them and not receive them
and
as
that,
a seller.
And that wouldn't even necessarily be a legal thing, more of a preference thing. But so
they're
not illegal,
they're not illegal.
And they they don't necessarily. You know, they're not, it's not like writing one is going to lead to a fair housing issue all the time. But what I'm saying is if the desire and the goal is to make sure that as the buyer's agent, that the listing agent is aware of this person's commitment, stability, and how solid their financing is. There are a lot of ways to do that, and a buyer letter isn't the only way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair.
But you know, it's interesting because the buyer letter could also help maybe the group that is historically not as advantaged.
Yeah, tell her the story.
Because you have, you know, you have people that are like, well, you know what? I don't care that I have a 20,000 higher offer. I go with this family because I feel like they need it more. You know, there are those sellers too. And that letter, and they wouldn't have gotten it because, you know. So it's a little bit, it works both ways, but I think it probably works the unfair way more often.
There's that, and then also there might be other groups in the mix that didn't get it. So who didn't get it, and you know, and what groups were they in?
Oh my God, but it's just exhausting.
Yeah.
It's like exhausting with everybody claiming, like, I didn't get it because I'm a woman. I didn't get it because I don't have a right job. I don't get it because of this reason, that. It's like, oh, for the love of God. let's be honest, when sellers are selling their house, more often than not, just like when people are hiring people for jobs, I mean, I feel like more often than not in this day and age, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm totally wrong, but most people, the money speaks. Like, yeah, the money speaks. Yeah. And that's what they want. They don't care. They're looking for the person who has the strongest case that they're going to close the deal. So, you know, that's how I've been approaching it. But here's the other problem. Yeah. If you don't put it on the buyer, if the buyer's not writing anything and the seller's preferring to know who's buying on some level, because they ask, are these investors? How did they find out about us? Like, what's their deal? You know, like, they want to know why they're writing. I'm doing my seller a disservice by not giving them anything, too, because then they're not making the strongest decision either, you know, in a way. And if they pick the wrong client because there's no information, and they pick the flaky investor who's a wholesaler, but they didn't realize that, then they hold me responsible for not getting them the right information. They think they lost money because now we lost time on market. There's a flip side to this.
So there's information that you that can be shared with the seller. So for example, you know, this is someone whose loan has, you know, or they've gone through a complete underwriting approval, and so all that's needed is the appraisal. I spoke a lot with the buyer's agent, and you know, they called me 2 weeks ago, and they have called me, you know, every few days to kind of check in. They seem really present. You know, there's a lot of things that you can, the information that you can gather that is completely related to, you know, whether this person is going to close. And also not based on any of those demographic type of categories.
It's interesting. It's a hot topic.
It's so hot.
Letters, yes or no. So you go no.
I would say no, and get, you know, find out that other information that actually is going to get the seller the information that they're really looking for, because a lot of that other kind of information can kind of slip through without us really.
You know what's going to happen? You know what happens? Mm. The agent calls the other agent. We're having a phone call. Mm. He's a doctor. She's a this, and they're super well qualified and blah, blah, blah.
You call the lender and get the information. Oh, she's they're
pregnant.
Great.
They're moving up, blah, blah, blah. And then it puts it on us.
Yes.
Do we share that information or not? Knowing our seller wants to know it. It's not illegal for them to know it. The buyer's trying to share that information to make a stronger case for the buyer.
Yeah.
I don't like that. Yeah. I don't like that it puts it on us.
Yes.
And that puts you in a tricky situation.
It does.
Because okay, so this person is an empty nester versus the folks who just had a baby and want to get a bigger house. Like, are we familial exposing?
It puts it in an awkward spot, because I had a seller once who's like, I do not want to sell to an attorney. And then we got an offer from an attorney. And I knew, and I'm not telling. What do I do? Do I tell him?
I would have called
CR's legal
advisor.
What do I do?
That's tough.
You know?
Just to make sure.
Did you know it was an attorney?
Yeah. That's so bad.
I don't know.
I hear that, though.
I would have called.
Maybe? Did I? I don't know.
I would have called legal hotline just to make sure that you're not, like, going
under. I'm being funny and over dramatic, but you know what I mean. What do you do?
That's a legal hotline question. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. Speed dial that into our phone.
And they're really responsive, really. Yeah. I mean, so CAR really is, now, especially now that I work for CAR, so we used to, the legal hotline calls would be done by our broker, and we had an attorney that they would call and all that. But, you know, what I realized working for CAR is that there are so many resources, and you can get someone on the phone, like, pretty
I know, but the CAR legal hotline, sometimes I'm like, I will say, like, okay, on paragraph L3, you know, whatever, da-da-da, and the person on the other end is like, hold on 1 second. I'm like, they don't know the contract number, you know? So I have had not such great legal hotline. Like, sometimes you'll call one person and get one answer. I'm not trying to diss legal hotline, because it's a great resource.
Yeah.
But I still think that if it's serious, you need to talk to a private attorney, because either sometimes there's limitations, is what I'm saying, with the free hotline.
Sure. Either way, the point is that some things are so on a gray area, and you want to protect yourself.
Gray.
And you want to protect your clients. I mean, at the end of the day, this is, so none of this is to be, you know, unreasonably difficult here, but the goal is a couple things. First of all, it's protecting the consumer. So if you're representing the seller, making sure they understand, you know, what they can and can't do, because they're not in it all the time,
right?
You know, so that's one thing. Making sure that, you know, as a professional, that you're giving the right advice and that you're protecting yourself. You want to, you know, nobody here wants to inadvertently violate a fair housing law.
Totally.
You know, you want to be in it for the long haul and do the right thing. And then, you know, the third thing doing is making sure that everyone has an opportunity to purchase a home, you know, that you're doing the right thing for the community. And so all of these things, and they're a little bit complicated, but there's a reason behind all of them. And so
I just wonder if there should be a hold harmless clause or something like that. If the seller opts to see the personal letters, that the seller has to just sign something saying, you know, that we are harmless, held harmless. Would that help us? As real estate agents?
I mean, that's sort of say in the listing agreement a little bit, right?
That is totally illegal.
It says it a little bit in the listing
agreement. It says it a little bit.
Sort of like, if you want letters, you're acting against the advice of the agent.
Yeah, it does say that. It does say that. But it's not
against
the advice
of the agent. No, but that's the thing.
I know, but it's not true. That's why I'm calling it out. Because to me, this is sometimes in our industry, you can tell it's the people who are not on the ground selling, making the forms. Mm-hmm. Because the things that are in the forms, like the listing agreement, we're supposed to put it into the computer within like 24 hours. Now, come on. You go on a listing presentation, the house hasn't had photographs, it's not staged, it's not ready. So now we have to create the SELM form in order to add that to say, look, we're signing a listing agreement. They're things.
Yeah.
They're things. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, it's sometimes the way it's worded, I'm like.
And so here's the thing, we have committees of practicing realtors who do that. So here's the thing, when they're
take a poll, how many of them put their listings in one day after signing the listing agreement?
And some of that comes from like NAR rules about clear cooperation and things like that.
That is not a clear cooperation thing. That has been in there.
Sure, but
that's an MLS rule too.
Some of it's in response to that. But what I would say for folks who have a concern about that is get involved in these committees, give that feedback to help shape the forms.
I went to the MLS.
She's like fighting against the windmills.
Listen, I am like talking into the breeze, man. I know I have a loud mouth. I know I say what I think. I know that, you know, for bureaucracy, they don't like that. Yeah. They don't want me to say how I feel about things, even though I represent the majority of what people feel and don't say. That's my role. I know that. It's okay. I'll take the heat. But I actually went to the MLS. I sat in the room when they invited people to come in and give feedback. And the person, this one was on like Vesta Plus, and the person that was there was like, okay, so what do you guys do in a day? And I'm like, you guys are creating the app for us and you don't know what we do all day? That's the level of disconnect I'm talking about. Yeah. So there's the industry like support, and then there's like the people on the actual ground. And real estate in some parts of California probably looks very different than what real estate looks like down here. So, you know, I feel like there's room for improvement on, sorry, didn't mean to spit on anyway. There's room for improvement in the way it's worded, because sometimes I read the line and I'm like, that's not, it's, I don't, I'm not, I don't want to say you're acting against my advice when I'm not giving you advice on this particular thing. It's your choice. And I don't know, other than the fair housing discrimination addendum and discrimination addendum, I don't know what advice I'm supposed to give, take or don't take the letters, because I haven't been asked my opinion on that.
So you are exactly, you know, the kind of, I think clients are done a great service by realtors who actually are that passionate about all of the different requirements and rules and trying to help give input, you know, whether, I mean, look, there's a lot of cooks in that kitchen.
Yeah.
And so that is part of the challenge. And I was that way too. And so, and I always thought, oh, they're never going to invite me back. You know, I said too much. I said it to this way, to that way. And look at me now. But
look at you now.
But the reality is that the hard thing about these rules is that, you know, there is, again, a purpose behind it.
Yeah.
It served this person or this group in this way, or there's a really important issue that they're trying to solve for, and they need all of our input in order to make it work. And you know, then you need an addendum to make sure that if you need an exception, you can do that.
Right.
But the opinions and the opinions that are informed by the practice that you have are so important. And so I just have to say, I want you to know that that's valuable, even if it doesn't feel like it changed the thing in the way that you needed it to be changed. Like, don't stop doing that.
Okay, like, so, you like, know, don't. She said it. So if I end up showing up at the MLS with some opinions, you know I was invited by Farrah. What is the future of diversity, equity, and inclusion in our association and in our industry right now in California?
I think that we are, so this is, we're not at the very beginning, so, but we are at like a re-beginning. I think we're at a stage where folks are still learning. You know, there's unfortunately a lot of misinformation about what diversity is and what its aims are on the news. I mean, there's really terrible fights about diversity. Yeah. And so we have to overcome a lot of that. But frankly, you know, we are at this point, and it's happening on a lot of different levels. It's happening, you know, at within our just realtor ranks, you know, on the member side of things, not just in leadership. You want to make sure too that the people who are creating the rules and the policies are reflective of both the membership and the communities that they serve. Mm-hmm. And we are at the beginning of kind of pondering what are the issues and what kind of programs will solve those issues. We've started to at the state level, and I've also seen at the local association level, which we support, and within brokerages, you know, that there are folks who are starting to assess what the issues are. There are some programs and initiatives coming online at the national level. They've had a consultant, they've come up with some recommendations, and then they're in the process. They're probably, you know, maybe even more advanced of instituting these things. And that's on the leadership side. And a lot of times people in my role or people who are on the board think of the leadership side, but it's kind of all hands on deck. And so I think we're not at the very, very beginning, but we're kind of close to the beginning. And I think that it's a marathon and not a sprint. And it's a really beautiful thing, because what I have seen happen is that as we build competency around having these conversations, and we get over some of our fears of having them, and we get over some of our concerns that we're gonna, we've been taught you don't talk about certain things, politics, religion, and we start to learn how to have conversations about difference. I've seen some really beautiful connections happen, and that was my experience. That's why I feel kind of really blessed to be in this role. When I got to Sierra, I felt really different. You know, I had my fro out. I was much, much younger than many of the people who'd been there, and I was brand new, and I felt like I had a different background. My clients were different. Everything seemed different. And, you know, I had to do some work to kind of work up the stamina to continue to stay there. And some of that was on me. And also, you know, I might have been experiencing some bias too. But what I realized was that, you know, even if I thought people were judging this book by its cover, I might have been judging a book by its cover too. And when mm-hmm. you really get down to the human level and start to have these conversations across difference, like, we can do magical things together. And so that, I think, is what we're starting to do. And it's beautiful. And I've seen people not understand something, be very against it, and gain an understanding. And it doesn't mean we all have to have the same opinion, but be able to work together on a solution that mm-hmm. everyone can feel comfortable about when they couldn't even have a conversation before. So that is what we're doing, is where we're at.
Yeah, that's amazing, and I think.
Keep having the conversations. So that's what it is.
Yeah.
We will, and I mean, it's a blessing to be able to do this. Yeah.
Well, we're happy to have you in this position for sure. Thank you so much for coming on Under All Is Land.
Thanks so much for having me. It's really been an honor. It was awesome.
And we'll see you next time. Bye.